This is a Rabble Podcast Network show.
New voices in your head.
It's Radio Free Radio.
You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM.
The rate of violence against Indigenous women and girls is far higher than for other groups within Canada. The violence affects First Nations women and girls from all walks of life and extends to every region in Canada, from reserves to the major cities. Within this tragic reality, there are being calls for a national inquiry into missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls, yet Prime Minister Stephen Harper has refused to hold such an inquiry. Last week, a study was released which shows that governments in Canada have repeatedly ignored expert recommendations to stop violence against Indigenous women and girls. And to talk about the report, I'm joined by two guests. Kula Lewis is the women's representative from the Union of BC Indian Chiefs, and she joins me on the phone. Hello, Kula.
Good morning, James.
And also on the phone is Kasari Govender. Kasari is the executive director of West Coast LEAF, the Legal Education and Action Fund. Hello, Kasari.
Hello. Good morning.
First of all, why was this report written?
This report was written just in response to that defense of the government that they're not holding the national inquiry because there's already been too many studies. And we wanted to show with this report that, yes, there have been so many studies, at least 58, with at least 700 recommendations, including a report from the Inter-American Commission on Human Rights, and including one more recently, which we didn't even have a chance to include, which was the CEDAW report, that international report that was just released last week. And all of these reports and all of these recommendations have happened, and yet there's been no progress. And so our point in writing this report is we need a national inquiry to show, to examine why these recommendations have gone unheeded and what we can do to remove the obstacles to ensure they do get implemented.
And what specifically did this report look at?
It looks at a whole bunch of different themes. So the 700 recommendations are divided into different themed areas. So for example, the area of safer transportation and women being able to move between home and school and various commitments, especially in rural areas, and to do so safely and to ensure that they are free from violence. And so they looked at how many recommendations have been made around safer transportation and have they been implemented. This one has particular resonance in BC when we know that on the Highway of Tears in the north, that was one of the key recommendations of the BC Missing Women Inquiry, and yet those recommendations have not been implemented in BC.
I just wanted to add to your first question, too. The issue of missing and murdered Indigenous women and violence against Indigenous women is the cumulative result of many failures and of Canada. As Harper has said and Bernard Belcour have said and supported, this issue of violence against Indigenous women or missing and murdered Indigenous women is a criminal matter that needs to be left with the police. Well, as we know, there was a report actually done here in BC and BC's north, those that take us away, that investigated, that looked into the issues that women face in the north and whether or not they can count on the police for protection. So, again, this issue that we face is the cumulative result of many different areas, which is something that a national public inquiry could investigate, that could look into all of the different areas. It's not just one thing. There's a huge basket full of issues that we're faced with.
Now, you've already touched on this, but the report does mention that there is a consistent consensus on the causes of violence against Indigenous women. And what are some of those causes?
I think a lack of funding and preventative measures and preventative services is a big one. Women organizations, Aboriginal organizations, First Nations organizations, organizations that support women in all areas, have faced consistent annual cuts to their funding, which really limits the amount of programs and services they're able to provide, and two, the number of women that they're able to serve. So I think that's a major issue. Changes to legislation and lack of change to legislation are also some concerns that need to be addressed.
Kasari, can you outline what some of the recommendations were in this new report?
Well, the report is more about talking about what recommendations haven't been implemented. It's not so much creating new ones. It's saying, look how many we have in each of these areas. We've already, yes, it's true that we've already studied this subject, and there is a great deal of consensus. And so why haven't these recommendations been implemented? And really, the primary recommendation of this report is implement all of the many studies that have been done. And we need to do that through the process of a national inquiry that really galvanizes political support, community-based support across the country, and ensures that the Aboriginal community, that Aboriginal women are included in that conversation in a very central way, which has been a significant problem throughout this journey of trying to address violence against Indigenous women. I also, if I could just add to what Kule was talking about there with the causes of violence against women, I think it's incredibly important to recognize the history of colonialism that has led to this point. There's violence against men from all cultures and all walks of life. It is a huge problem in Canada and around the world. But what we're talking about here is violence that is intimately connected with racism and colonialism. And we need to recognize that in order to know how to address it.
Now, if we're successful in getting a national inquiry started, Kasari, what would that look like from your perspective?
It would look like a few different things, I think. And you know, we had an interesting example here in BC with the BC Missing Murdered Women's Inquiry. And what we learned is that good recommendations can come out of a very bad process, and nothing good will happen with those recommendations because the process itself is so incredibly important to moving from where we are now to moving to a place where we're a safer and more inclusive society. So I think in order to do that, we have to think about the process of the inquiry itself. We have to ensure that an inquiry makes victims feel heard and creates a public record of facts, holds offenders and assistants accountable, creates structural change, and fosters reconciliation. And it's that last piece in many ways, well, the first piece and the last piece that really can get left out if there's not a strong process. So myself and folks from PIVOT, folks from BC Civil Liberties Association, we wrote a report a few years ago called Blueprint for an Inquiry. And the main recommendation from that is that we have to, if a national inquiry is to be effective, it has to consult thoroughly at every stage in its process with Aboriginal organizations, with women's organizations, and most importantly, with Indigenous women's organizations like the Native Women's Association of Canada.
And Kula, what's your perspective?
Coming back to a good point, Kasari, on the colonization and the history of colonization and systemic racism, this is not a new issue. Violence against our Indigenous women is not a new issue. It's something that we've been facing since contact. And I think something that needs to be addressed and acknowledged is that our nations within all of our respective territories have had our own ways of governing things. And so upon contact, a lot of that was taken away. And with the introduction of the churches, a lot of that was, Indigenous women have been dehumanized, disempowered, and the solutions, as Kasari has said, in developing these processes to address and move towards reconciliation must involve Indigenous women, must involve First Nations that face these issues on a daily basis. I think we're in a world right now where, although we think that, you know, we're really tackling a lot of issues of addressing human rights and advocating for human rights and, you know, across the globe, we need to look right in our own backyard to really be honest with ourselves about the attitudes that are present here in Canada right now. I think it's going to be, it needs to be a huge shift, but I think that comes from a lot of education. And I think that is something that could come out in the national inquiries, examining all of those pieces that, you know, that play in this in this tragic puzzle, and reflecting on those and making those systemic changes that need and will support, I hope, a shift in attitudes as well, First Nations people, as I hear on some of the comments that are left on under some articles and some radio shows and TV shows, that First Nations need to, and Indigenous people just need to, they just need to get over it. You know, how much more money do you want? You know, this is all on the taxpayer's dollar. Well, Indigenous people are the most highly taxed people in Canada. We're the only ones that sit on our own territories and our own lands. While we see resources and our resources extracted and really no compensation for that. So there is a much bigger question and that's a much bigger discussion that needs to happen, and I'll leave it at that.
Now, there's already been a provincial inquiry. Why wasn't that satisfactory, Kula?
The Missing Women's Commission of Inquiry failed before it even began, and that had a lot to do with, as Kasari had mentioned, the need for inclusion, at all levels of the process, including developing that framework. The terms of reference were not inclusive, ensuring equitable participation in the actual inquiry was not there. There were a number of Aboriginal organizations and that were shut out of the process. That process saw the police heavily armed with their legal team and not the same provided for those that support our women.
And Kasari?
Yes, I agree with that. I mean, it was partly about the terms of reference, partly about or mostly about the exclusion of groups that should have been involved at every stage. And there are very practical ways to include those voices. So, for example, by providing funding to the organizations that should have been there in order to allow them to be there, including, for example, supporting vulnerable witnesses to attend the proceedings and testify. There are examples in other jurisdictions, both within Canada and around the world, of successful or mostly successful kind of truth and reconciliation type processes where the voices of the people most directly impacted are represented in the inquiry. It sounds like a kind of an obvious thing. If we're going to inquire into what went wrong, don't we need to hear from those who are most impacted? And yet there wasn't that process in place to allow women, to allow families, to allow service providers to really participate in a meaningful way and in a way that felt safe to them. And we do have lots of examples. We weren't asking for something radical, actually. This was really well-documented processes that were not implemented in BC.
Now, the government says we need more action, not just another study. What's your response to this, Kasari?
I think there's no question that's what we need. And that's exactly what we're calling for in the context of the national inquiry. There's no question that after 58 reports and 700 recommendations, what we need is concrete action. And yet the government is saying that, but in fact there is no concrete action. If there was concrete action and we were making progress, we wouldn't need an inquiry, but that's not what's happening. In fact, women are still dying. We don't know what's happening and where the police are and where the systems are that are supposed to be there to protect all Canadians. And yet they're not there for Indigenous women. And the fact is that the problem remains. Fact is that action isn't being taken, and this is a concrete action that we suggest will make a huge difference in Canada.
And Kula?
I think in the implementation of any recommendations, for one, I think it's a great point that Kasari and I have both brought up about the process and the process leading into the process and how important that is. And she pointed that the first and last recommendations of a blueprint of inquiry are exactly that. And the second, you know, as it happens, you know, in our day-to-day lives, you know, if we harm somebody and we go to apologize, that's not enough. That's not enough to just say, well, it's too bad that you feel that way. You need to follow that up with some, you know, walking walking the talk. And so here we are. Let's take the Missing Women's Commission of Inquiry, for example, or any of these reports that have been published with no genuine, meaningful implementation. And in that implementation, that itself is a process in involving First Nations women, Aboriginal women in the design and of those implementation processes. So I think it gets to be very frustrating when we continue to say that the solutions lie with, as Kasari says, those that are impacted, and not in the sense that the victim is at fault here and that the victim themselves can prevent this and address this and rectify this, but that these recommendations need to have genuine involvement in developing the solutions as well.
Now, I asked earlier about the root causes of the violence, and I know we've been touching on that throughout the whole talk this morning, but I was wondering, just to sum up, if each of you can give us some thoughts about what are the broader issues that we all need to look at underlying this horror. Kula?
I would say I'm going to point back to the history, you know, contact, pre-contact, you know, the attitudes and the beliefs and values that were placed on women, you know, for those that were coming to Canada, you know, and carrying those and seeing those attitudes reflected in these laws that were imposed unilaterally, again, imposed upon the people that were here from the beginning and before they had even arrived, as if we didn't have our own ways to govern ourselves. So we see that it's the main thread through all of history. And I think we need to really reflect on that, and any of the processes, any of the legislation that has been designed has been designed on that premise. And if we're going to see any real change, we need to really acknowledge that and begin looking at the very beginning. This is not a new issue. This has been there for hundreds of years, and our people, and I'm sure our ancestors, have spoken up about it and said that what's happening is not right, and we continue to say that what is happening is not right, and we will continue going forward to say what is happening is not right until we genuinely begin to work on this and address this issue of violence against Indigenous women, violence against women, and missing and murdered Indigenous women.
Kasari, do you have a final thought?
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree with Kula, and as I said earlier, the roots of these problems run deep. But I think it's also important to remember that it doesn't have to be, that can be quite overwhelming to think about this huge history of colonialism and where this all of this violence comes from. That's all very true, but it's also good to remember that we have concrete solutions, that we have a path forward. We don't know every step on that path, but we do have a path forward. There are, as I've said, 58 reports and 700 recommendations saying the way forward, and yet those recommendations have not been implemented. Simple things like putting in public transportation system along a highway. You know, these are not hard things, and yet they're still not being done. So we have this long history of colonialism, and that's important, but we also need to look at going forward, and can we take these concrete steps? Yes, we can. Can we do them without huge expense? Yes, we can. We can even do some of them without a ton of money, and yet they're still not being done. So let's look at the obstacles that are facing us right now, the entrenched and systemic racism that's preventing these actions from happening right now, and confront them in the present day.
Well, I agree. It does seem overwhelming at times, but I'm glad you present some solutions, and I'm very glad to have had the chance to speak with both of you today.
Thanks for having us on the show.
Thank you.
I've been speaking with Kula Lewis and Kasari Govender. Kula Lewis is the women's representative with the Union of BC Indian Chiefs, and Kasari Govender is executive director of West Coast LEAF, the Legal Education and Action Fund. And you can read the review of the reports and their recommendations on violence against Indigenous women in Canada at leaf.ca.